Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're going to be ranking a game we nominated for ourselves, Oregon Trail Deluxe.
Basically, your whole goal is to get from Missouri to Oregon.
If you get to the end, it doesn't matter how much of your family dies as long as you're there, right?
Well, it actually does matter if you're playing for score, because having everyone is
about
2,000 points.
It's 1992, I'm in the computer lab at my school. What I'm playing for is to not be reading or doing anything else. So I'm playing, for that. And then also you get to leave funny tombstones when your kids die. So that's like the real reward of the game, is when your kid dies of dysentery, you get to say like, Boogerman died of dysentery.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. No. For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
I don't know.
Hello and welcome back to Hardcore Gaming 101's Top 47K Games. Today we are going to be talking about Corpse Party, a horror game nominated to us by Nana via Stitcher via a 5-star review. Thank you, Nana. It was developed by Team Grizz and 5PB. And was published in Japan by Konami, and in the West by Marvelous Inc. The earliest release dates we have to keep track of would be August 12th, 2010 in Japan. And while this is listed as being for the PSP version, we'll also be discussing the PC version, since it's, roughly the same thing. And with me here to talk about this... why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself there, Bear?
Hi, I'm Real Soviet Bear. I was in a few more episodes. Now I'm here for Terrible Corpse Party. Hi.
Welcome back. Great to have you back. You know, I do feel a little weird saying this, because, this is a horror game, and, the horror game's trying to get into your head a bunch, and, trying to do, the psychological sort of thing. And that doesn't really bother me, but one thing that did kind of get me about this is... in the credits, I saw a name of someone I know, and, Sara, what were you doing in the credits?
Yes, well, I was a localization programmer on the PC version of the game.
Welcome, Sara. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sara Lean. I work for Marvelous, and, you probably know them better as Xseed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have, done many a good work in the independent scene on conversions to the PC.
I suppose you could say something like that. Localization programming just kind of became a specialty of mine at some point.
And it's one that many of us are very pleased that it became a specialty of yours. Do either of you have anything in particular you'd like to plug before we move on to the game proper?
I do some Twitch streams on twitch.tv/realsweetbear. I do that little bit of a game dev focus as well, so tune in for that, I guess.
I'm good.
Alrighty then. So, Corpse Party. Basically, first in a series of horror games, although not the first entry in the series. Sara, you know more about this than anyone I know. Why don't you lead us off with that one? Why don't you tell us, you know, what Corpse Party is as a franchise?
Of course. Corpse Party originated as an RPG Maker game made for the PC 9801. It was made using RPG Maker Dante 98, which is one of the earliest RPG Maker versions. It's like back in 96. It was a fairly simple RPG-style adventure game, and people ended up really digging it, in part because it had great music, and in part because it was just kind of unique at the time. But come 2007, it was remade by the original team for Japanese mobile phones, and then in 2008, they took this port and made it into a PC game, which is essentially the version that we are looking at right now, except it had indie voice acting, had more indie art. People think it looks less professional. I think it has its own charm. But that came around to Mages, 5PB, remaking the game in their own way, you know, with better art and better voices on PSP.
And PSP is what you played, Bear, yes?
Yeah, I played a few years back on PSP. But yeah, I've heard that the PC version is more or less the same.
Alrighty then. So, I suppose that we should set the tone good and proper. So, Corpse Party is a horror game, as I've previously mentioned, that seems to kind of run with the idea of just kind of like occultism as it's conceived of in Japan, more so than in the West, and just kind of like things just kind of go wrong real fast.
Yeah, the game definitely has an occult base. There's a lot of stuff about superstition involved and, you know, like ghost stories in a way. And as a result, you just see a lot of Japanese-style horror, I would say.
I would say that's an apt description for the kind of thing that happens. So, the setup is you have a class of some students, one little sister, and a teacher, totaling 9 individuals. And as an effort to just kind of, like, say, you know, happy goodbye to one of them who's transferring, they kind of do, like, this little cute little occult ritual that's, you know, harmless and etc. And it's just supposed to be like, hey, with this we'll be, you know, friends forever. We'll always be together and that kind of thing. And then things go wrong.
Yeah. At that point, basically their classroom just seems to fall apart and they find themselves in a strange ruined school that just doesn't exist anymore in the real world.
Yeah, I personally like to refer to it as the misery dimension. Because boy howdy, I can't think of a better way of describing it.
I think it also is like something weird, like they're all in the same school, but they're not in the same space.
Right, yeah, there's multiple instances of the school.
Yeah, essentially, inside of this, you know, cursed school, there are a lot of different spaces that are completely self-contained. Like, they have very similar layout, very similar look. You might not be able to tell the difference between them unless you look at the color of the walls or something subtle like that.
Personally, the way I went about it was, okay, which has the broken floors here?
And that is certainly a valid way.
But, yeah, so the group of victims, I guess, is what the game kind of canonizes their reference in a way, end up in kind of spread somewhat evenly between different spaces. 2 of them end up in 1, 4 of them in another, and then 3 in a third.
Yeah. And of course, there's also some kids from other schools that are in these spaces as well, and most of them don't make it.
Yeah, there are many, many corpses to find over the course of the game. I'm fairly confident there's like over 100.
Essentially, you can find these name tags for all of the students that are already dead, and it contains, you know, their name and a basic description of how they died.
Mm-hmm.
And then your characters can also die in a lot of very gruesome ways.
Yeah, so, as Sarah mentioned, this has an episodic structure to it, and each one is pretty well self-contained. So, you know, chapter one is its own thing, and chapter two will pick up off of, you know, the canon ending of chapter one, regardless of, you know, however you decided to end that one. And it just kind of continually goes and goes until you hit the climax of chapter five, where things kind of open up a bit more.
Absolutely. Interestingly enough, the game was actually released episodically originally in its PC version, because this was an indie game release, and the team working on it was rather small, aside from their voice acting cast. So they basically released one chapter at a time until they finally got to chapter 5, which released after the PSP version was actually complete, which is interesting. The game does open up a lot at chapter 5, however, and essentially you get to control multiple parties with a sort of zapping system, as it's called, to switch between them.
Did I hear you correctly? Vapping?
Zapping.
Zapping. Okay, yeah. I heard you very wrong. I'm sorry. So, as with any kind of, like, good adventure game, and particularly one, you know, based on, you know, occultism and whatnot, is, like, I feel like it is, like, an establishment of rules, because if there's not any rules, then there's not really a lot of, like, substance to anything that happens. There's not really any cause or effect. And this is kind of where I kind of start to have, like, a bit of a problem with the game in Chapter 1, and it gets better about it as the game goes on, but Chapter 1 sets up the rules and proceeds to break almost every single one of them.
I suppose that is true, isn't it?
Yeah, so, whereas in later chapters, there is definitely, like, a cause and effect for, you know, it's like, okay, you did or did not do this, and that means that, you know, this situation comes out, and so you get a bad ending. Whereas in chapter one, there's one thing that you'll do that just, it's only going to make sense why it happens in kind of like a hindsight after you blow it, and only if you, you know, blow it, because if you don't do it on, you know, purpose, and you actually just go through it, you know, correctly without making a mistake like I did, you wouldn't even realize, you know, like, oh, I didn't realize that was, you know, a correct thing to do. I thought it was just a thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, like, Bear. Sure, Bear, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, first time I played this, I didn't really know, like, the rules of the game either, and I think I had to replay the chapter, I think, like, 4 times, getting a bad end, thinking I got, like, everything down perfectly, only to consult a guy and realize, oh, you didn't read this thing.
You didn't read this damn newspaper.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, how, like, what does that have to do with anything? And then I'm like, okay, I guess the newspaper has something important to survive, and then you play the ending and everything happens exactly the same, except you kind of survive.
Yeah.
It's different enough, but it's like, it's kind of one of those things that, like, makes sense in, like, a long form hindsight kind of way, but in the short form, in, you know, the chapter one itself, it just doesn't make any damn sense. And, you know, like, one of the rules that gets established is, you know, read the writings of those who have, you know, died before you if you want to live. And, you know, this newspaper, there's a skeleton nearby that has carved into the, you know, the ground with their fingernails. Don't read that paper. And if you don't, then you die. So,
yeah, and it's really hard to connect the two things at first, because you encounter this newspaper near the very beginning of the chapter, but at the end, if you didn't read it, you end up eating a pair of scissors.
Part of a balanced breakfast.
And then in the second chapter, if you do read too much, then you also die.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although
that one at least has a warning sign that is not lying at you.
Yeah, they telegraphed that one pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely one where the later the chapters go, it's pretty clear that the dev team got kind of more into their groove and figured out, you know, what does work, what doesn't work, and, you know, Chapter 1, I was not enjoying myself at all. Chapter 2, I'm like, okay, this is an improvement, but it's just kind of there. 3 was a little more of the same. And then 4 happened, I'm like, okay, I'm actually kind of enjoying myself now.
Yeah, due to the episodic nature of the game, you can very much tell that each chapter was a lesson for the next.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also tell that the budget increased.
Yep. Way more voicing. Way more art assets and way more stuff to do.
Yeah. Yeah, the first one is like also just pretty bare bones because it's just two characters talking and like two bad endings and one good end, something like that.
Yeah, it feels like a tech demo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a proof of concept. Like that is, sorry, you were telling me that, like, that is actually one of the differences between the PSP and PC versions.
Well, actually, it's the 3DS version that added another bad ending for Chapter 1, which, you know, is following the same format as the later chapters in that there's, like, 5 notes for you to read, and if you read the last one, you're dead.
Hey, we came up with another way for you to go out of your way to kill yourself.
All right, it was probably the, like, easiest thing to add without messing up the actual chapter.
Yeah. That being said, I'm honestly kind of surprised that they never like went back and changed the first chapter because it is such a departure in quality from the rest of the game that I feel that it could only really benefit from it.
Yeah, when I think about it, that actually does surprise me too, because they did make some improvements to the game that just seemed like they should have been backported. Like when I was working on the game, we found that the room titles that would appear in the corner of the screen were actually text boxes in the first couple of chapters, and we fixed that ourselves.
Hmm. Oh yeah, why don't you go ahead and give a quick mention about your programming contribution to this in particular.
Absolutely. You see, the PC version of Corpse Party was originally coded in a strange programming language called Hot Soup Processor, or HSP for short. And HSP is like the bastard child of Java, Basic, and to a much lesser extent, C. And as a result, it's a very strange programming language to work with. And so the original game, like the dev team obviously did their best and they're great people, but it's kind of held together by like electrical tape, not even duct tape. And
so, chewing gum and prayer. Emphasis on the latter.
Yes. Essentially, when we realized we were going to be bringing the game to Steam, we thought, well, this version of the game might be hard to support, and it may be difficult to bring Steam features to this version properly. And so, me, ever the optimist, suggested that I could convert the game to C++. And by God, I did it, but it took me...
from scratch.
It took me much longer than we ever imagined, because the game was much more complex than I had imagined.
Jeez.
Yeah, so... for those who don't know, when Sara sets out to localize a game for a platform, no, really, we mean it. She deserves all the credit. And I'm so happy that you were able to be here for us today.
It's my pleasure.
So, going on, you know, it's like... a horror game kind of, you know, lives and dies, as it were, you know, given, like, the strength of, you know, its narrative and its characters and whatnot, and, you know, the fact that there's, like, 4 or 5 follow-ups to this one says that, you know, it did well enough to the majority of I can talk, wow! The majority audience to, you know, keep going.
Yeah, not only did it spawn sequels, Book of Shadows, Hysteric Birthday, Blood Drive, and the currently work-in-progress Dead Patient, or Corpse Party 2, it also spawned a couple anime OVAs and 2 live-action films.
I didn't know they did live action ones. I had heard about the anime.
Yep. One is based on the original game, and the other is loosely based on Book of Shadows.
Hmm.
Very loosely.
Yeah, from what you were telling me, it would be a little difficult to adhere to that more strictly.
Yeah, see, when it comes to Book of Shadows, a lot of people believe at first that it is just a retelling of the original game, but that is a misconception. In reality, what Book of Shadows does is essentially fills in a bunch of gaps in the story of the original game, but doesn't retread its plot, aside from at the very start.
Yeah, so the narrative is, you know, of course, like, a big deal, and the characters are a big deal, but I one of my thoughts going through this was I didn't really feel a lot of, like, particular attachment or any kind of speciality to the characters, so it's, like, it kind of makes sense to me that they would follow it up with something that would give them a chance to add, like, you know, more depth to the situation and the characters.
I would say it was definitely the right call, although most people who've played the game love Seiko.
Yeah, like, the named cast with, like, portraits and, you know, et cetera, consists of about, like, 15 people or something, and two of them, like, actually grabbed me on any level, and Seiko was one of them.
And that is a very understandable thing, because she's a really colorful character, whereas then you have characters like Satoshi, who is kind of a blank slate.
He's the digi-destined of courage, is what he is.
Yeah, he is, like, he's basically a standard issue anime protagonist.
He's Makoto Naegi.
I feel like Yoshiki is probably the more interesting of the, like, male cast, because we don't get to see too much of Morishige.
Yeah, Yoshiki was like, when it came, it's like, okay, how do I describe this guy in a succinct and punchy way? He's Yusuke Urameshi. It's like, okay, he's kind of a delinquent who gets, like, in shit with, like, a dickhead of a teacher who intentionally tries to drive him to getting expelled.
Yeah,
I've seen this before.
It has, like, a really, like, hardcore delinquent backstory, as in, like, everybody disowned him, like, his parents, his siblings, nobody believes in him. Stuff like that.
When you actually look into his backstory, he's basically a determinator. He's just completely determined at all costs to just keep going in life, and it's really something.
Yeah, like, they give you glimpses of this in the main story of the core game here, but, like, you know, it's like, those kind of details are, like, I don't know if, like, you'd find that in, like, the extra chapter things. I didn't really have the time to go over those. But, like, that sounds like the kind of thing that would be, you know, like, filled in by, you know, successive games. And it's like, it feels like they did a good job with that. But in this one, it's a little, like, just kind of, you know, here's his archetype.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of how the characters feel. It's not that unexpected because, like, you know, in the original PC-98 game, you had very basic characterization of just five characters with simple archetypes. And interestingly enough, some people think that Naomi is actually more bland in the PC version than the original, because in that version, she's kind of a little mean.
Yeah, like, the other one character that I said, like, grabbed me in particular was Naho, who, as far as I can tell, is the only character that has anything approaching a complex motivation in this game.
I definitely love Naho as a character myself. It's very interesting how you can see, like, such different sides of her and learning exactly why she did what she did. She's one of my favorite characters myself.
Yeah, like, I don't feel it's, you know, too much of a surprise that Seiko and Naho are, you know, some of the more beloved or, you know, respected characters, because they're kind of the show stealers of this game, like, in, like, these ensemble casts.
Yeah, that is an understandable take. What do you think, Bear?
I can definitely see why people like Seiko. I kind of feel like, I don't know, are we allowed to discuss spoilers in this episode?
We'll keep spoilers to a minimum.
Okay. I kind of feel the, like, they want you to be as attached to her as possible, also, in kind of a way. But I do like her because she kind of stands out more than Cass. I don't know who I'd pick as a favorite, though. I kind of like both Yoshiki and Ayumi because I feel they have a good dynamic with each other. But I feel on their own, they wouldn't be super interesting.
You know, I can accept that. I did kind of prefer, you know, those two hanging around, and it's just like, okay, it's pretty clear that Yoshiki, you know, has, you know, feelings for Ayumi, but he recognizes that now is not the damn time.
Yeah. I also really I kind of
felt bad for him because like a lot of you know their interactions is her pining for Satoshi and he's just like deep breath.
I also thought Kizumi was pretty interesting, mostly because the entire plot has like this major omnipotent villain that's just kind of there like as a presence, but he kind of appears as you know, an actual, like, mini-antagonist.
Okay, so Yuya is hilarious to me because in the PC version, all the characters have art that's, you know, fairly, like, super deformed and stylistic and is, you know, kind of true to the, like, would you say it would be true to, the, like, the PC Engine version, Sara?
Kind of. Like, the PC 98 version actually had quite silly-looking art, too, although in a much different style. But yeah, Kizami's art, it almost looks like the PSP art. It's really close.
It just looks like a regular anime guy. And I took one look at this guy's art, and I'm like, you have a different art style. I don't trust you.
That is exactly what you said.
I'm like, this guy is otherworldly by a measure of this otherworldly game. This is not right.
Yeah, I just took a look at the PC portraits because I've never seen them, and yeah. yeah, I definitely, that's kind of like almost foreshadowing how evil he is.
Hi, I'm pretty.
It almost reminds me when you have, you know, lighthearted animes, and then you have, like, the super dark fantasy villain with, like, excessive shading everywhere.
Yes. I know exactly what you mean.
Walks into every room with a clap of thunder.
Exactly.
The entire left side of his face is just black.
Only it's the entire side of his face that's pretty.
Yes, totally. Kizami, I actually find him quite interesting as a character. Like, when you delve into the extra chapters in Book of Shadows, he's a little more complex than he looks.
Yeah, like, we're not going to spoil it, but I do like his reasoning of just going quote-unquote unhinged, because in a way, like, it makes pure logical sense, it just makes no emotional sense, so that's why he's kind of, like, interesting, where he just goes under in that angle.
Yeah, I was getting kind of, like, this guy is supposed to be, you know, a psychopathic character, and I'm just kind of, like, going, I've got my eye on you, boy. Because that's, like, one of those things gets mishandled, you know, a lot, and they don't really go into it super much in the core game of this to really make a judgment on that one, I feel.
Yeah, they don't. I'll fully admit that.
Yeah, so we've mentioned, like, Book of Shadows and how it, like, gives, like, depth and whatnot to a bunch of characters. I was actually asking Sara earlier if, like, you know, if, you know, that could provide so much more information and depth to the characters and, you know, the characters in the narrative or, you know, what you're really here for, or, you know, wouldn't it be better to just skip to that? And you told me.
Well, it does exactly that. Like, you know, Book of Shadows is all about filling in the gaps and things. It does not really advance the plot that was started in the first game, but it gives you a lot more time with some of these characters to really get inside their heads and see how they respond to certain situations that you didn't see in the first game.
But it also doesn't actually give you the first game, so if you haven't played it, then you're going to have a lot of difficulty following.
Oh, you would be completely lost, and you would wonder, why should I even care about these characters? Which is ironic, because that's part of why the game is there.
I also think, like, because Book of Shadows is a straight-up visual novel, and, the regular game is more, you know, RPG Maker, horror, you walk around, explore stuff, I feel like in Book of Shadows, you have less of an idea if you just play it exactly how the skull looks, in a way, because you're just, like, changing screens, whereas, like, in the regular game, you're kind of actually traversing the rooms physically.
Right. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because, like, they reproduce the map's layout roughly, but, you know, it's just presented as a grid of rooms that you can walk through.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it has the same sense of, like, locale, which is fine, because if you play the first game, you already know how it feels, which is, I guess, what they expected.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's pretty exactly what I'm going for.
Pretty much what I come away from with this is, like, it feels like if you play one or the other and, you know, only, then you're not really getting the full experience, and it's kind of about mandatory to play both of them. Would you say that is about accurate?
Well, personally, I would say that the first game does stand on its own decently well, but I definitely think it benefits a lot from Book of Shadows. Book of Shadows, on the other hand, I just don't think it would be anything without the first game.
Yeah, like, I think it's best... I've only watched a playthrough of Book of Shadows, but it definitely feels like a collection of bonus chapters, because, like, not only does it expand some of the core characters you didn't get to play much, like, you don't really see much of Mayu in the base game, and she gets her own
chapter. Well, you
chapter.
See her all the time.
Well, in a way, yes. Yes.
Word is definitely not wrong.
And the game
wrong.
Likes to remind you about that a lot, I noticed.
You don't hear her much. Okay, maybe I can... phrase like that. And you don't, like, really see anything of a lot of the other school students, or, like, you know, like, you hear about Kizumi and, you know, his classmates and what happened to them, but you don't really see them all that much. So I feel in that regard, it's good to play with.
I did feel like they didn't give anywhere near as much time to Rui, the teacher. She has like five minutes of screen time. She's getting abused every minute of it.
Yeah. Was Yui in the original game, like the PC-98 one?
No, it was only Satoshi, Naomi, Yuka, Yoshiki, and Ayumi.
Okay. I can't remember whether she was there or not.
Yeah, you'd never actually see a single teacher in the original PC-98 game.
All right. So I feel like we should move on to ranking, since we've passed the 30-minute mark. I put the link there for you if either of you didn't have it previously for the list.
Yeah, I've been kind of thinking about... I guess my starting point was probably... like, the most similar thing was Yumaniki that I could find, in a way.
Yumaniki, where we got that one?
That's 237.
237. Yeah, that's kind of where I was, like, sort of thinking, somewhere in, like, the mid-200 range. That's kind of where I was thinking of opening stuff.
It's definitely a very similar genre to Yumaniki. So, that is a good starting point. Let's see.
I haven't played Yumaniki, so I'm not gonna comment. I have, however, played Silent Hill 4 The Room, and I would rank this above that, because I really don't like Silent Hill 4 The Room.
That's that one for reference.
That's 255.
I see. Okay. I have played some of Yumaniki. Like, I played it for like 10 hours and achieved basically nothing, which I feel is like the Yumaniki experience for
You're
anyone who doesn't go out of their way for it. So, given that things happen, I'm inclined to say that this is better than Yumaniki.
Yeah, right above that, you've got DDR Third Mix. It's interesting to see that these games are even close to each other.
And then you have Baroque, which is, you know, a horror genre thing. So, you know, right here in the horror chapter, we've got DDR.
I learned something new today about DDR, I think.
Going a bit more up, I definitely play it above Flashback and Splatterhouse.
What would you say?
I like Flashback. I just think, like, the later games of that type are much better. Like, I much more like Out of This World or Another World and Heart of Darkness. And Splatterhouse, I think this is around Splatterhouse in terms of, like, very good aesthetic and mood, but the, you know, kind of clunky way to play it.
Yeah, the visual presentation and audio presentation are the best parts of this game, I feel, when, like, you break things down by, you know, like, systematically. Although I will say that in the PC version, please turn the in-game volume down, because boy howdy, I had the music at 1% towards the end of my playing of it, and it was still way too loud.
There's one death in a corpse party, which is like just, you know, text and a still image, but the audio of it is so good that it makes it the creepiest ending, I think, in like any the second chapter one.
That reminds me, sorry, you said that that was actually one of the differences between the versions was the bad ends.
Yeah, in the PSP version, for the most part, the bad endings have CGs associated with them, you know, still pictures that just pop up, whereas the PC version preferred to basically explain the bad ends and try to make you feel them.
Descriptive
text. Yes. Mm-hmm. Although both versions of the game tended to have binaural audio for some of these things, and that definitely ups the feel of it.
Right. Okay, so you're looking at around like, Barry, you're looking at around like 225. Yes.
Around that, like up or down, but around that.
All right. Sorry, what are you feeling?
I can't really argue that too much because, like, I would definitely rate it above Full Throttle at the very least, but I can't really say that I would rate it above Guardian Heroes.
Meanwhile, I'm looking at my entirely not nominated by myself Golvelius entry at 229, and I'm like, I would definitely rather play that than Corpse Party again. But both of you are in agreement for that, so I can't really make too much of an argument on that front. So it's looking like 225 is where we're putting it in?
I think that's okay. About right, yeah.
Alrighty then. 225 is going to be the new closed space for Corpse Party. Whoops. That is where the number goes, not the text. Alright. Any closing comments or plugs that you two would like to end up on?
I'd say if you play Corpse Party, like PSP or PC one, if it seems too difficult, just play with a guide. It still has a lot of stuff. Like, I play through it with a guide on my like screen, and there's still a lot to like discover. There's pretty good like story-wise and like acting and stuff like that.
I will say that I did not need a guide for the entirety of the game to get the best ending, except for one part where I just couldn't be bothered to do the puzzle.
I would say that Bear mostly has the right of it. Like, as long as you get a spoiler-free guide, it will not spoil your experience at all, which I guess is the point. But in general, I would just say people should give Corpse Party a chance. It's a really nice series, and it darn well better have been worth all the work I put into coding the entire game.
If for no other reason, give Corpse Party a chance, because Sarah put her heart into it.
So much of my life gone.
Thank you, Sarah.
Truly, you are the one who is actually cursed to never escape the horror.
Yes, I will be trapped with Heavenly Host forever. I had to port Book of Shadows and Hysteric Birthday to PC as well.
I only appreciate your sacrifice.
I only found out about Hysteric Birthday like a month or so ago, and I was so confused.
Yeah, well, it hasn't been out very long, so.
If you like dark comedy, give that one a crack. Thank you both for being here, and have a good evening, folks.
You too.
Bye.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real. Boom, boom, boom.